Hello and welcome back to Last Time On. This is the podcast for people who want to watch all this prestige television, but who's got time for it?
You know I don't.
It's morphin' time.
That's a morphin' time.
It's a time pun. That works.
I know we didn't have time to get through the synopsis in one episode, so we're back. I'm Jafar.
I am Ben.
I'm Victor, and we are joined by...
Are you there? Is our special guest here?
I'm here.
Yay!
I'm keeping the mute button on in case my network goes plunk. Yes, Angela, I am here.
All right.
Welcome back.
Well, I just took a week-long nap, and I'm still tired, so I should probably get a sleep study, guys.
Fair enough.
You know, I went to one of those, and I absolutely hated it, but now I sleep with one of those Darth Vader masks, and it took me some while. Yeah, took me a while to get used to it, but now I can't sleep without it. It's the best.
Yeah, so. You enjoy your sleep bong?
My sleep bong, yes.
I just want to shake some sense into you kids that I use in drugs and think about using. So remember, don't, or else. Okay?
All right. Well, we're going to dive right into our second review episode. Hopefully get through a little bit more this time. So, Jafar, why don't you take us into season 4?
Let's do it. We start off with small victories. The replicator on Earth is reproduced and taken over a submarine. O'Neill and Teal'c neutralize the threat. Carter goes with Thor to defend the Asgard homeworld from the replicators, and they use Asgard's newest ship, named the O'Neill, to lure the replicators into hyperspace, where the ship is blown up. After that, humans on the planet Yuranda contact Stargate Command for help. They are fighting a losing war against an enemy they call the Breeders and have run out of food and fuel supplies. I only know one type of person who has ever called another type of person Breeder, and I'm sure it's a very different context. SG-1 travels to Yuranda and make an alliance to trade heavy water for advanced technologies to combat the Gould. But SG-1 discovers their new allies are guilty of mass genocide against the Breeders, so SG-1 sabotages the base, and it is destroyed. After this, the Tok'ra Anis gives Antok arm devices to O'Neill, Carter, and Daniel that greatly increase their strength and speed, but the devices rely on a virus that is eventually neutralized by the human immune system, causing the SG-1 members to lose the strength they have gained. However, they don't realize this until they are on a mission to a planet where Apophis builds a new prototype mothership.
Oops!
After this, SGC is visited by Chinook, a female Jaffa, who has discovered how to communicate with her larval Gould symbiote and claims that she has information that could destroy the Gould.
Is it Chinook? Is it spelled C-H-I-N-O-O-K? No. Okay, different one.
It's not like the helicopter.
S-H-A-N-A-U-C.
Oh, weird.
After this, the Gould can impose subconscious programming on humans. That's not good. The Tok'ra have a test to detect this by detecting lies. When it's applied to the staff of Stargate Command, Carter and O'Neill are found to be affected, supposedly in the episode Upgrades, which was the one a couple episodes ago where they got the Tok'ra thing with the virus. However, it is discovered that Carter and O'Neill are subconsciously failing the test because of their suppressed feelings for each other.
What?!
They realize and correct their mistake.
Gross.
What?
Is it Carter and O'Neill?
Carter and O'Neill. What?
And they correct their mistake. That's interesting.
That's banging. They bang, right? It's the show's on Showtime. Of course they're banging.
Carter and O'Neill are a thing and theory throughout the rest of the series.
I knew it. I knew there had to be some kind of awkward tension there at some point.
What about his wife?
Their ex-wife. And O'Neill is attracted to intelligent blonde women. Gimme.
All right. After this, an encounter with an ancient time device, O'Neill and Teal'c get trapped in a time loop that only they know about.
Oops.
Time loop of Groundhog Day episode.
Groundhog Day episode.
I called that one. Yeah.
Groundhog Day episode. Second favorite episode ever.
After that, the name of this episode is Watergate. After that, the Russians have been using a second Stargate in secret. But after dialing a world that is completely underwater, they lose contact with their Stargate facility and approach SGC for help. The Stargate floods them, Ben.
You had proposed this a number of times.
That is the Maria Sardis episode.
Troy?
Yeah, Deion Troy, yeah.
Okay, question. This Russian Stargate, is it the same one that's in Antarctica?
Nope.
So there's three fucking Stargates on Earth?
Yep. We'll get there eventually.
Oh, man.
In the Russian Stargate, water flood you.
Water flood you. There you go.
They find that there are microscopic beings that live in and control the water. They break free and attempt to return home through the Stargate by controlling human bodies and emitting enough energy to keep a Stargate open indefinitely. Which is something that can't happen, but does happen twice now.
But it can only be 36 hours.
Or whatever, yeah. 36 minutes. It was. After this, when helping with the evacuation of the fossilized Goulds on the homeworld of their planet and the Unis, Daniel Jackson is captured by an Unis named Chaka. The rest of SG-1 tries to find and rescue him.
We've met Chaka.
Yep.
Yeah. So that world... with Chaka, that's the Gauld and Unis homeworld?
No. Okay. Yes or no. Okay. There is a homeworld, but it's not where we met Chaka.
Okay.
Chaka we met on the alternate planet where they were kind of enslaving them, the Unis.
Okay. After this, Earth resettles a group of Ankaran refugees, a race of humans who have been specifically adapted to their homeworld and thus require exact environmental conditions. To another planet, but an alien spaceship is transforming the new planet into a hostile environment. After this, SG-1 has their memories altered and have been press-ganged into work in an underground industrial complex to save a city from an ice age. They must recover their memories to escape.
Also, for sure, not an ice age, but that second episode is straight up an episode of Star Trek Voyager. Everybody gets their memories stolen and forced to work in a factory.
I remember that episode.
After that is the episode with Martin Lloyd that we saw, the alien who didn't know he was an alien because his memories had been fucked, but he knew about the Stargates.
Oh, what was his name?
Marty.
Martin Lloyd.
Marty, that's
great. Great episode. Lots of fun.
And that is the one where I discovered I needed to pick Cylons from the new Battlestar Galactica, because the only person from the old Battlestar Galactica who also appeared in Stargate is John DeLancey.
You just don't get it, do you, Jean-Luc? The trial never ends. We wanted to see if you had the ability to expand your mind and your horizons. And for one brief moment, you did.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
John DeLancey was on the original Battlestar Galactica.
He must have been like, what, like 6 years old? Or
as a young man, he was like a bit character.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
That's news. That's fun. Yeah. Okay.
But before we move on to the next episode, this was the one where we saw Carter lockpicking the door. So Angela, is it ever explained where Carter got the skills to lockpick?
Let us ladies be mysterious and simply know what we know.
So
good answer.
That's
no arguments.
No, they never fully explain it, but we just know what we know.
Right. So is it like hinted at that she used to live a life as a, I don't know.
She's never lived a life of crime.
No, that's the only hint we ever get.
All right. Fair enough. Moving on.
After this, Teal'c and O'Neill test fly the first experimental aircraft based on combined Earth and Goa'uld technologies. But soon a hidden trap in the aircraft takes control of the X-301 and propels it into open space. Sam and Daniel enlist Jacob's help in to rescue before their air is depleted. After that, Daniel's old archaeology professor has died. Daniel goes to the funeral and discovers a controversy surrounding the professor's death. SG discovers that a Goa'uld, Osiris, has escaped from an ancient canopic jar the professor's team was studying. Ooh.
Fucking cursed jar. Right? Man, that would have been a great prediction.
Cursed jar. Should have been on the list. Save it for the next show. After this, the Tok'ra and Stargate Command want to sabotage a meeting of Heru'ur and Apophis, who seek to form an alliance on a planet that is surrounded by an old minefield. Oh, great place to have a meeting. The team must rig one of the mines to spark a fight between the two system lords that destroy each other. SG-1 discovers Heru'ur has captured Teal'c and intends to use him as a peace offering. Jacob plans to meet Teal'c and Rachnor, a supposed friend of Teal'c's, on the inside, on the third moon of the planet Tik'nor.
These are some awkward names.
Some real awkward forced-in names for no reason, Wikipedia. After that, Hammond abruptly resigns as the head of the SGC and is replaced by General Bauer. O'Neill suspects there is more to it than Hammond will admit and refuses to let the matter rest. While General Bauer is planning to make a Nequandra bomb and test it, dooming SGC, O'Neill teams up with Harry Mayborn to get Hammond reinstated.
Yep.
After that, we go to an alternate future. Earth has defeated the Goa'uld with the help of the Ashen, a bland and humorless advanced people from a world that has a designation that I'm not reading. Earth discovers too late that the Ashen plan to depopulate the planet by secretly sterilizing much of the population through life-extending drugs. Thus, the former members of SG-1 sacrifice their lives to send back a warning back in time to tell themselves not to contact the Ashen. The season 5 episode 2001 resumes this story. Hey, does Teal'c die in that episode?
It doesn't count, man.
Oh, it for sure does.
They all die.
Teal'c dies and O'Neill dies?
They all die in that episode because it's
fantastic.
A
crime. That's science for me.
Universe, dude.
It is not an alternate universe. They create an alternate universe when they send they back, and some. Everything else is an alternate universe after this episode.
It is not the prime timeline of our show. It does not count.
It clearly is.
It does not.
The funny thing about prime timelines and powers, none of them ever count anymore anyway.
Yeah, I hate to admit it, but I say it counts. Yeah.
Here for it.
It does and doesn't.
All right, it does. After this, the Harsesis has come to visit. Stargate Command puts Jackson in a coma-like state. Jackson experiences what it means to have all knowledge of the Goa'uld and their ruthlessness.
Oh, this was one of your predictions, Ben.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the DJ gets other memories, downloaded.
After this, SG-1 discovers a world abandoned by the Goa'uld, where there is a room with a beautiful, mesmerizing light display, but the light may have an insidious effect.
No, Harry, no! Don't look at the light!
I can't help it. It's so beautiful!
Crappy episode.
I was going to say, it sounds like the worst episode of this show.
It's more like those that they make fun of later on in a clips episode. Oh, well, I watched this and this and this. Yeah, those were the worst ever.
All right. Let's see. After this, Carter meets a brilliant U.S. Air Force cadet while lecturing at the academy, but the cadet has a problem with authority. Mm. Carter decides to show her there are possibilities that she isn't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
On an off-world mission to a moon 72,000 light-years from Earth, energy-based creatures take a dislike to the Tauri, and Carter and the cadet must work on a solution to get everyone home. This episode includes a cameo by General Michael Ryan, the then Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force.
That's weird.
No, it's not. This show's super imperialistic and loves the military. Yeah. I am not surprised at all.
Not
I'm sure this show did a ton for Air Force recruitment.
Oh, heck yeah.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, it's probably not Top Gun, but there was a lull in the after Top Gun, and they needed something. So they got this, and then this has been off the air for forever. So then they got Top Gun Maverick. So to give it another like 5, 6, maybe 10 years, and SG-1 comes back, I promise.
You're not wrong.
All right. Stargate Command sends a probe through the Stargate to a world inhabited by electronic life forms. The base computer is compromised by what is apparently a very advanced computer virus, which eventually displaces Samantha Carter's mind from her body.
Yes. Yes.
After this, Cronus's army captures the android computers of the SG-1 episode Tin Man on the planet Juna. The members of the real SG-1 must work with their robot duplicates to free the planet.
That was also a Voyager episode.
That was directed by Michael Shanks. Hey.
Nice.
After this, we've got our season finale, Exodus. Apophis is on his way to Vorash, the planet the Tal'Kra are using as a base. Carter and Jacob attempt to wipe out Apophis' fleet by sending a Stargate linked to a black hole into the local sun in order to make it go supernova.
That is hell badass. That is some shit you think of in a D&D campaign.
For sure. That is the chain of peasants railgun, like, in D&D. 100%.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Okay. Season four is over. Let's go over our season four predictions. I actually have had all three of mine from season four confirmed already. Okay. I'm good.
So I have just one. Angela, was there ever a wedding episode?
Not specifically, no.
No! Well, was there ever an episode where the SG-1 team had to get their tuxedos on and attend a wedding?
No, no.
Ah!
No, sorry about that.
That's a no.
Okay, Ben? I've got one. I know it's already confirmed, but I'm curious, Angela, if you would just give me a ballpark, like to the nearest tens, how many times do our SG-1 team members get captured and tortured?
I have lost count.
We saw them get captured, sometimes multiple people captured by different groups. Uh-huh. In every episode we watched.
Yeah.
Yes, that is one of the common jokes among the series. How many times did Daniel Jackson die? Well, again? How many times? Again? And how many times did they get captured? Way more than you can count.
All right. And then, is there a heist episode and a casino episode?
Heist, yes. Casino, no.
All right, that's what I thought. All right, so that one, no points for that.
Yeah, no, I did look that one up on TV Tropes. Apparently, there's a casino episode in Stargate Atlantis. Which, that doesn't make any sense to me, because, I mean, Atlantis, it's not...
It's a whole other galaxy.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Meanwhile, Cheyenne Mountain is just a few hours' drive from Las Vegas. So,
It doesn't happen.
Bummer.
Let's go to season five.
All right, season five. Let's do this. After Apophis has brainwashed Teal'c, SG-1 and Jacob prepare to fight against their foe aboard Cronus's ship. A mysterious ship then appears and attacks Apophis's ship, disabling it, causing them to flee, giving SG-1 the chance to get aboard. But danger lurks in the form of an army of replicator bugs and an auto-destruct program.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Teal'c has been saved from dying on Apophis' ship, but remains loyal to his old master. Braytak uses an old Jaffa ritual that will either bring Teal'c back to him or kill him.
Ah.
After falling unconscious, Carter returns from Valona, a planet full of ruins. Suffering from suspected exhaustion, she begins seeing a mysterious young man named Orlin, who can walk through solid objects. Before you walk through walls, you will look it in the eye. but everyone believes that she's seeing things.
Well, we love Orlan.
All right. O'Neill remains on a planet to protect Lieutenant Tyler, a fifth member of SG-1, whom only the other members of SG-1 can recall. Back on Earth.
What?
So this is absolutely a MacDuff episode from The Next Generation.
Oh, God, what's his name from Rick and Morty? The fucking banana man.
Oh, Mr. Poopy Pants or something?
Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, God, that show. All right. So, back on Earth, Hammond informs the team that Tyler doesn't even exist when Colonel Simmons returns, seeking to shut the SGC down, citing the latest alien mind games as possible safety risk.
Well, wait, then, okay, then this, I've got it backwards. This is where fucking Rick and Morty got that idea from, for Mr. Poopy Butthole. This is the origin story of
Mr. Poopy Butthole.
This is amazing. Oh, wow.
All right, SG-1 traveled to Katao and discovers that the sun has been shifted to the infrared end of the spectrum. All life on the planet is doomed, and SG-1 are responsible. The planet's inhabitants are Norse people and worship the Asgard and believe that the reddening sky is a sign from their gods. In reality, the event is a solar reaction caused by SG-1's wormhole that spells the death for the planet and its people. All right. Dr. Frazier's adopted daughter Cassandra enters puberty and begins to developing telekinetic abilities. Who doesn't?
How about the power to kill a yak from 200 yards away? Kyle.
Jesus Christ.
But the strain of producing so much energy is causing multiple organ failure. Frazier and SG-1 fear they might not be able to stop the life-threatening changes caused by Gould Nearty's genetic experiments. And then we get to Beast of Burden, which we watched. Chaka, the Unus whom Dr. Jackson befriended, has been kidnapped and taken to a planet where humans use Unuses as slaves. On a rescue mission, Jackson is risking not only SG-1 safety, but also an aged-old system, and he starts a rebellion.
Yeah.
Hope you can sleep at night. SG-1 gets trapped on an ancient ziggurat, along with a Russian team. Here they discover the remains of the original Russian team who had gone missing. And there's also a Gould on the loose, one who is willing to kill and inhabit anyone it wants with the sole intention of escaping. The Talon, in highly unusual change of policy, agree to share advanced technology with Earth, but Carter's friend Narim warns them that this might spell great danger for Earth. And then, SG-1 visits an agricultural planet inhabited by the Volans, who introduce them to their more technologically advanced allies, the Ashen, who propose an alliance with Earth. After Daniel Jackson and Teal'c discover the Ashen would be the gate address they forbade themselves from dialing, Earth severs all contact with the Ash. And then, Carter is kidnapped by a dying millionaire, forcing O'Neill to team up with Harry Mayborn in order to find her. Okay.
I swear, they played, the writing team just played Mad Libs at some point.
Yep. All right, and then when Stargate Command learns of a television show whose premise closely resembles its operations, SG-1 investigates. They find that an alien named Martin Lloyd is giving the producers their ideas. So Martin comes back and he's sold Stargate as a TV show.
What's the name of that TV show and the name of that episode, Ben?
I don't know. It doesn't say the name of the TV show. The episode is called Wormhole Extreme.
The funny thing is, they do that for the 100th episode, which syndicates SG-1, and they also do it for episode 200, where they come back again with Wormhole Extreme.
Awesome.
That's fun.
Oh, hell yeah. And it's...
That might be on my list of our go-back episodes.
Episode 100 for Wormhole Extreme, yes. And episode 200 for Wormhole Extreme 2. Do it.
All right. And then SG-1 is running training simulations for a group of new recruits. Things begin to get more serious when aliens invade.
Bad first day on the job.
Yep. And then on a planet, SG-1 comes under fire from Tanith. Teal'c shoots down Tanith's Alcash, and the ship crashes into the Stargate as Teal'c is in transit to Earth. Teal'c does not rematerialize, but his pattern is stuck in the Earthside gate. With a deadline of 48 hours, SG-1 must find a way to save Teal'c before he is lost forever. As Daniel and Major Paul Davis attempt to make a deal with the Russians, O'Neill finds himself forming an unlikely partnership with rogue agent Harry Melbourne as General Hammond deals with Colonel Frank Simmons. Carter finds herself collaborating with the obnoxious Dr. Rodney McKay, the world's foremost expert on the Stargate. Well, then why are we not? Why hasn't he been here until now? Who's already decided that trying to save Teal'c is a waste of time. I am the greatest Stargate expert, and that's why I show up in season 5.
John DeLancey plays the best asshole, as does any of his other counterparts in that episode.
Who was John DeLancey?
Frank Simmons.
Okay. So he's the colonel that Hammond is fighting with. All right.
That's fun.
Gets in the end a little jerk.
And then there's a truce among the Gould, and the system lords meet on a heavily guarded space station. The Tok'ra plan to kill them all, but require a human who can speak fluent Gould, and Daniel is the only qualified candidate. The Tok'ra create a version of the real chemical from the fifth man for the undercover mission. Meanwhile, Anubis attacks the outposts of Kale on planet Sarador, destroying two motherships. Lord Zipakna, under orders from Anubis, attacks Ravana and the site of the main Tok'ra base after Vorash. Dang, sounds like stuff is getting crazy with the system lords. Then a powerful system lord shows himself for the first time in 1,000 years and offers to destroy the Tauri and Tok'ra. Meanwhile, SG-1 and Lieutenant Elliot / Lantash are trying to escape the Tok'ra base. All right.
Yeah,
and
that's a whole heavy story on its own.
Yeah. And then an amateur astronomer discovers a rogue asteroid on a collision course with Earth. SG-1 and a couple of engineers repair the cargo ship that crashed on Ravana and head for Earth. Just before they reach the asteroid, there's a problem with one of the engines. They start heading for the asteroid, but manage to stop at the last moment. Teal'c and O'Neill place a Nequadria-enhanced nuclear weapon. Carter discovers that the core of the asteroid is composed of Nequadria, so exploding the nuke would destroy Earth. They manage to use the ship's hyperspace engines to transfer the asteroid to the other side of Earth. See, this is why you can't just nuke everything, guys.
Nuclear launch detected.
That's almost.
Yeah, that's almost. Was it Armageddon? Was the name of that movie?
Yep.
It's almost Armageddon.
All right. The Jaffa Rebellion has led to a new leader, Kitano, who seems almost too good to be true. SG-1 visits Kitano's Jaffa camp on the planet Kalma to negotiate an alliance. However, Kitano sends rebel Jaffa on a suicide mission to a stronghold under the control of Nirti. And when Kitano sends Teal'c on a suicide mission against the Ghoul's system lord Yu, he finds that the new leader isn't what he seems.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, deception.
The team finds an android that somehow managed to survive a replicator attack. They learn she is the mother of all replicators, but has the mentality of a young child. Yeesh. Not great.
Have we talked about what the replicators actually are yet? Because we had some theories. We never actually saw them. I believe Jafar's prediction was that they were
actually replicators.
Yeah, malevolent Coke
machines.
Actual
replicators. Yeah, from Star Trek, just straight over.
They're complicated.
All right, we'll go with complicated.
It's not a no.
It's not a no.
In that particular episode you're speaking about, yeah, she did kind of create what we know as replicators, but they are an absolute enemy of the Asgard and the Ancients.
And the Ancients, you say?
Yep.
All right.
All right.
But they are the death of the Asgard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. We'll get to seasons later.
I mean, we see the we saw the finale, so we saw how things end for the Asgard. All right, and then the Latonans are a once advanced race that abandoned technology to focus on mental development. Their homeworld, Latona, is defended by a 500-year-old device called the Sentient, which was inadvertently activated by a rogue NID operatives seeking to reverse engineer it. With Latona being invaded by the Gould Svarog, SG-1 brings the NID agents with them to repair the Sentinel and save the Latonans from the Guo. And then Daniel incurs lethal radiation exposure. Good job, Daniel. When he prevents a potentially cataclysmic accident in a weapons laboratory on the planet Langara. But the mysterious Oma Desala shows him that death can simply be another beginning. While the alien government responsible for the lab accuses him of attempting to sabotage their research, the Colonian Jonas Quinn tries to negotiate with SG-1.
Jonas!
That's right.
Yeah.
So
Jonas.
So Jonas jumps in where the scientists of that planet would not and saves the entire planet, and he dies as a result. However, the ongoing joke is what? Daniel died again? We lose track of how many times the character dies over the course of the movie, the original movie, and the whole series.
Yeah.
Right.
Dino Jackson dies again? Whatever.
All right. Like so, and then finishing up season 5, as Jack, Sam, and Teal'c struggle to come to terms with losing Daniel, an Asgard scientist, Heimdall, is stranded on Adara 2, a planet under attack by the Gauld. As the Asgard have no spare ships, they ask the Stargate Command, particularly SG-1, to help. Using their salvaged Gauld cargo ship, Anubis is finally revealed.
Dun, did you dun, say? Dun. Did you say Heimdall?
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Heimdall. Yep. Heimdall is voiced by Terrell Rothery, also known as Janet Frazier.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
Oh, Janet. That's cool. We barely knew ye.
Oh, my
God. All right.
I knew her very well. You guys barely knew her. You guys.
Such is the consequence of the game we play.
I know.
Speaking of the game we play, that's season 5. Anyone got any predictions to get cleared real quick?
I have one. You have one?
I got the Chaka the Unus returns with friends.
I'm trying Chaka to get the episode back straight in my head, but I believe he does.
Okay.
I know he comes back, but I think he comes back alone.
Yeah.
Okay.
The only one, just because I really want it to be true, and I'm scared to ask because the lab told us it was true. At any point, does Teal'c fight ninjas?
This morning, members of Fort Campbell's 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment were attacked by a man dressed as a ninja in California.
Yes.
Not really.
Are they ninja-esque?
They are dressed in all black and they fight like maniacs. So I guess
I'm
going to
call it
not ninja.
There's an entry.
I would give you the credit for that, but they're not really Japanese ninjas.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
they
so
are
there's
badass, super duper fighters.
There's an entry in the Stargate wiki called Jaffa Ninjas. So they have their own page.
I wouldn't call them ninjas myself, but I can see where you would.
It's right here, stargate.fandom.com/ninja Jaffa.
I believe I've seen it, and yes and no.
Yes and no.
Works for me. All right. Well, with
they
that,
might have
why don't
inspired
we move
the ninjas of the earth? Ninjas of the earth.
I do have one for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so wait, two. I'm pretty sure one of these is already confirmed as a no. So does Cassandra ever become a villain?
No.
Nope. Yeah. And does anyone in the show ever go on a talk show? Like not the documentary. I'm talking like a David Letterman style talk show.
New show, yes. Talk show, no.
I'll leave it up to you guys for that one.
You specified talk show?
It says, I said talk show.
Wow.
I fell into the trap of being too specific.
Yeah. It's not really a talk show, but there were a couple of news shows of... Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
60 Fair Minutes, enough. Not Ellen.
All right, so I'll let that one go.
We've made it through five seasons. Do you guys know your point totals right now?
Yes.
Just everything that we've had confirmed, either from predictions that we haven't talked about yet, or ones that we've gone through these seasons and double checked.
Well, right now I'm at 41.
All right. I'm sitting at 48 right now.
Oh no!
Sorry. I read the wrong thing. 48 was my previous total from Lab Rat predictions. Mm-hmm. I'm at 39 right now.
Oh,
okay.
So okay. I have got 8 points pending. So my maximum possible point totalage for this is going to be 49. So
okay, it's
if I get all these right, which I seriously doubt all these are going to be right. There's no way. So
I have a bunch of points pending right now.
Ooh, this is going to be neck and neck. How about you, Ben?
I only have my score up through what we've reviewed. I'm at 24. Oh. So
you're the only one who's doing this assignment correctly.
I'm at 25 through season 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're all neck and neck.
All right.
All right, Vic. Let's do season 6.
Here we go, diving right into season 6. We begin with Redemption Part 1. As SG-1 and SGC struggle to cope with Daniel's death, they face a new threat in the form of the System Lord Anubis. Anubis has launched an attack against Earth using an ancient weapon that will trigger an overload of energy into the Stargate in order to destroy the entire planet. Planet killer.
We've had a few at this point.
Yeah. As the SGC scientists scramble to find a solution, Carter finds her abilities as a scientist and a military officer being put to the ultimate test, with her woes increasing as her rival, Dr. Rodney McKay, returns to the SGC from Russia. Teal'c goes off-world after learning that his wife is gravely ill, but is left devastated when he learns that she's died. Damn. And then Jack still refuses to let a Russian soldier join SG-1 despite pressure from both Chekhov and General Hammond. After learning that Earth is under attack, Teal'c, Bratak, and Ryak embark on a dangerous mission to find and destroy the weapon at any cost. With the plan to contact the Asgard having failed, the SGC are left on their own, and Carter seeks a solution while continuing to deal with McKay's unwelcomed presence. Meanwhile, Teal'c, Bratak, and Ryak prepare an attack on the planet, which has Anubis' weapon. Jonas later gives Carter an idea about saving the planet, but it could result in Earth losing their Stargate and the Stargate program being shut down for good. And then SG-1 attempts to salvage a Gould mothership that has been mysteriously abandoned in space near Earth. Unfortunately, the ship crashes into the ocean. SG-1 discovers that Thor's consciousness is still in the central computer.
Did you find the files?
I don't even know what they look like. What do they look like?
They're in the computer.
They're in the computer?
Oh.
Yep.
And then the Antarctic team, investigating the site where the second Stargate was found, discovers a woman frozen in the ice. When she inexplicably recovers, the team realizes they have finally come face-to-face with an ancient. The team starts to suffer the effects of a deadly virus, and while the woman helps to heal the infected, it becomes clear that it's taking a toll. And then, bizarre behavior in a small American town proves to be the result of Gould activity. That is the shortest summary of an episode we've had yet. And then O'Neill has been captured by Ball, but is being held in a fortress too well protected for Stargate Command to help. However, Jonas believes that Lord Yu might be persuaded to lend assistance. Meanwhile, O'Neill is helped through his ordeal by Daniel, who, although forbidden from taking action, tries to provide comfort. Okay. So, is this a ghost Daniel here? Next episode is one we've seen. It's Shadow Play. The Kalonan government contacts the SGC, offering to exchange Naquadria for advanced technology. Jonas's old professor asks him to help a secret resistance group and prevent a world war. Ah, this was the one with our Cylon.
Our second Cylon. Yes.
Second Cylon. Yeah. Ah, the next episode is the other guys. Dr. Felger worships SG-1, and when he has the chance to rescue them from a Gould mothership, he does not hesitate.
So this is a famous episode.
Because, yeah, this is the other guys.
This is the one that's got John Billingsley, who's Dr. Phlox in Enterprise.
Dr. Phlox, yes.
there's a reference to Jeffrey Combs. There's a Batleth in the episode.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Man, if you just rolled one die higher.
That's not how the game works.
It's the damn game. And then the Jaffa Rebellion, the Tok'ra, and their base commander, Malik, and Stargate Command are temporarily forced to share Earth's Alpha Site, a secret refuge, when the Tok'ra are attacked. Suspicion between the Tok'ra and Jaffa turns hostile when a series of murders occurs. Ah, this is the murder mystery episode that you predicted.
Hey!
And then SG-1 visit Pangar, a planet once ruled by Ra. Ooh, the Pangarans offer a wonder drug called Trentonin in exchange for gate addresses, but fail to mention that the drug is produced by using the progeny of the former Tok'ra queen, Egeria. The drug also destroys the user's immune system, causing a crisis when supplies ran low. SG-1 calls in help from the Tok'ra Malik and Kelma after Egeria is freed by the Tok'ra. Kelma. She tells the remorseful Pangarans how to free themselves from the Trentonin. And then a reporter has information on the Stargate program that threatens to broadcast it on television. The SGC offers a deal to allow her access to the Prometheus on the condition that nothing is aired until the Stargate program is made public. However, the camera crew turns out to be a rogue NID agent and take control of the Prometheus. Yeah.
How do all these reporters keep finding out about?
And then the Asgard have called all the replicators in the Asgard galaxy to one planet, Hala, but the time dilation device that was meant to trap them on planet forever has failed to activate. The Asgard want SG-1 to use the Prometheus to find out why. Unfortunately, what they find is that the replicators have accelerated time and evolved to human form.
Ooh.
And then, on a deserted planet, SG-1 discovers a piece of ancient technology. When it is moved to Earth for study, people begin to have inexplicable hallucinations. And then Senator Kenzie is shot, and all the evidence seems to show that O'Neill was the assassin.
I believe it.
And then Mayborn offers to help the SGC find a cache of advanced alien weapons, but he is not telling them everything he knows. That's the... Wow, they really just shortened the summaries of these episodes here. And then the Russian team discovers that the planet where Neritri has been experimenting on the human population to create the perfect host. And then the Russians and the Americans reveal the existence of the Stargate to the British, Chinese, and French governments due to the mounting threat by Anubis. Senator Kenzie tries to use the meeting to hijack the program, but Hammond has a card up his sleeve. SG-1 finds a wrecked spacecraft whose crew claims to have been fighting off aggressive aliens ever since they crashed. It later turns out the crew are in fact prisoners of the Sarakan ship Cerberus. The Sarakan are an advanced race who once helped free the human Hebridians, descendants of the Celts. Ah, they mentioned Celts, at least. From the Gould millennia ago. Since then, the two peoples have lived together in a largely harmonious society on the planet Hebedrian. Then Teal'c finds himself jumping between realities of Earth and the planet Kreshta, where a meeting of 108 Jaffa rebel leaders are ambushed by the Gould system lords. Only Daniel seems to display any understanding of reality.
And then on the maiden flight of the finished Prometheus, the reactor overloads and SG-1 must find the Stargate buried on the alien planet Tagria in order to obtain spare parts from Earth. Tagria was once ruled by the Gould Herrer, and the memory of his occupation was so traumatic that the Tagrians buried their Stargate and wiped out all traces of earlier history so as to make a new start. Despite opposition from the xenophobic elements of the Tagrian military, the progressive chairman Ajwan assists SG-1 in locating the Stargate and eventually opens relations with Earth. Then SG-1 finds a planet where the population worship Baal and work in the mines to provide his representative Lord Mott a tribute of Naquita. There we go.
Naquita.
SG-1 intends to stop him, but things get complicated when Jonas starts seeing visions that could kill him. And finally, Daniel Jackson contacts Jack and tells him that Anubis has located the Eye of Ra, an enormously powerful weapon. SG-1 heads for Abydos to rally their old friends against Anubis' fleet, while Daniel confronts Anubis and learns a terrifying truth about him.
But why, Mr. McGuire?
Do you want to know the terrifying truth? Or do you want to see me sock a few dingers?
Dingers!
Ooh! When trying to find the eye, SG-1 learns that there is a lost city of the ancients that may hold the key to defeating Anubis once and for all. And that is our season.
All right. Well, with that, we've made it through season 6. We've got 7, 8, 9, and 10. And guys, I got to tell you, I'm getting a little sleepy again. I think I need to take another week-long
nap.
Another
week-long nap, yep.
So I think we're going to do that. I think we're going to take another break and come back next week with the third and hopefully final run-through of SG-1. Because, wow, there is just so much of this show. There's so much.
And we haven't even gotten to Atlantis yet.
Nope.
So we'll be back next week with season 7, 8, 9, and 10. But until then, thank you, Angela, for being able to join us today. We really appreciate you helping and clarifying some stuff out. Thank you, Ripe, for letting us use Goon Squad as our theme music. We really appreciate that as well.
And thank you to everyone in the Dominion Research Lab for your participation, if not accuracy. And if you'd like to leave a comment on our show, hit us up at lasttimeon@gmail.com. And if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Facebook, we would greatly appreciate it, and we'll give you a shout-out here on the show.
And thank you to Annette Lucina for your photograph of a television that you've licensed under Creative Commons that we have turned into our podcast artwork. Thank you for making free art so we can make free art. And we will see you next time on Last Time On. Hey.